Yeah, I was gonna, Howard Stern.
That was smart. Nice one, guy.
He's like, trying to Howard Stern us.
Yeah, that was very good.
It's, we creative. Don't care.
Very good.
Yeah. don't bother. Yeah. It's not like you're bringing the level of the show down, okay?
First of all, it can't go any further.
Yeah, now. Yeah.
And second of all, that was 3 years ago, man. Get with it.
Yeah, we're not that, what's the word, sensitive?
Yeah, we're over it.
Yeah, we're it doesn't throw us.
All right, 201-209-9368. What's the strangest thing you've seen in someone's house? FMU, you're on the radio.
Hi, Sangri. Hi, Angry.
Hey, what's up?
Good evening.
You don't know me, but you know my sister, Jenna.
Uh-huh.
And, I got something weird in someone's house. I went to my friend's house once.
Mm-hmm.
I looked in her freezer that she has in her room for some reason.
Freezer in her room, yeah.
And, she has, two dead guinea pigs and a dead gerbil that have been there for about 5 years now.
That's gross.
In Jenna's room?
Not in Jenna's.
No!
I missed something. But whose room?
My friend's.
Okay. And why do they have dead animals in their refrigerator freezer for so long?
I'm guessing that they planned on burying them, but they just haven't really gotten around to it.
In the backyard.
Yeah.
They better hurry before the cold weather comes.
Thanks for the tip, Andy.
That's my advice.
I am sick. All right. Thanks for calling, mister. What's your name, Jenna's brother?
Pierce.
All right, Pierce. Have a good one.
All right, thanks.
You meant some skepticism there, Frank Green.
Yeah, he kind of talked like Jenna. The way he was like, all right, Jenna talks. She ends her sentences very abruptly.
I think that may be just youth today.
Really?
You know, yeah. 15 years ago, it was the up talk. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sick. Poop. Okay, listen. Poop? Well, I was going to say the S-H-I, but I stopped myself.
Thank goodness.
They want to know what you're wearing to the meetup.
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Are you going to wear something slutty?
Yes.
You should.
Or my version of slutty, you know, bow tie or something.
All right.
I have to be at work earlier that day. So
FMU, you're on the radio.
Too slutty.
Yeah, you got the puddings and the pop.
Hi, you're on the radio.
You wouldn't do it, so he did.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good how are you?
I'm okay. I'm noticing a very strong dead animal theme in tonight.
Shut up, weirdo is usually... Somehow, someone brings in dead animals.
Yeah, a lot of dead animals. So I have kind of like a different spin on the whole dead animal thing. This is kind of odd. So I saw in my mom's friend's house in her living room, she has a decorative, very, very realistic-looking stuffed dog that breathes.
I'm sorry, that breathes?
Breathes. Like, it's a fake dog, but it's... It has a mechanism in it where the abdomen kind of expands and contracts as if it's
and
slowly
if you were to put
breathing.
Your hand in front of the mouth or the nose, you'd feel air coming in and out?
No, I don't think it actually expels air. I think it's just like it's just made to appear to breathe. The whole abdomen kind of rises and lowers, and it's in a curled up position. And
an illusion of breathing, yes.
Yeah, and the whole thing is very, it looks like a very real dog, but it's just a, you know, stuffed, baked dog. Yeah.
That is odd. How do they, I don't know that much about taxidermy, but I assume that something like that would be especially difficult.
It's got to be, like, plugged in and have a motor and everything,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, and I don't think it was actually a taxidermy dog. I think, it's just a
rubber simulacrum, like a replicant.
Not even a taxidermy dog, just a real-looking stuffed dog, I guess.
I recently read a Philip K. Dick novel, so those sort of things are in my mind. A simulacrum.
Yeah.
All right, mister, thanks for calling.
Sure.
Have a good one. Andy, they want to know if you're going to wear just a bow tie.
No, I'm not going to wear just a bow tie. That's ridiculous. You need
should.
To have a collar.
You should.
Well, I'm not.
Guessing says Andy will wear a bow tie around his you-know-what.
Well, if I do, you won't be able to see it.
I love that so much. Call us 201-209-9368. Let's go through the people on my list, yeah?
Okay.
Chris the waiter with the rocking horse in the party room.
Rocking horse in the party room. That is a good one.
Diane with the rats in the bathroom under the black light with the wet towels.
Ooh, that's hard to beat.
Chris from Brooklyn with the crazy enema kit with the pulleys. That was awesome.
I sort of want to see that first. I'm wondering, is that like a whole room devoted to that? We didn't ask.
Oh,
we
I didn't
have
ask. And Margaret with the crumpled lab. Wrapping paper room, which I kind of loved.
Well, let's see. Black light rats. I think that's my favorite. But enema room is...
Enema room is up there.
It's got a strong pull, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I kind of like that one.
Well, it's up to you, Fran Green.
But I also really love the crumpled wrapping paper. It's so quirky.
Well, you know, I used to work at Martha Stewart, so that's kind of a...
We have a full
part
board
for the course.
Do you think we can get through all these calls? How much time do we have?
We have almost no time. We have 2 minutes to end the show.
Okay, we can get two calls. FMU, you're on the radio. Make it quick.
Yes. A friend I used to work with at a car business, we went to his house, a bunch of us, and he has a family portrait. There's about 12 or 15 people in the portrait. And in one of the people, he cut out the likeness of Adolf Hitler and put it over somebody in the family portrait. And it's there in the living room with all these other, like, serious family photos.
I like that. Funny. Okay, thanks for calling.
Portrait.
Have a good one. Hi, you're on FMU. Make it quick.
No more time. No more time.
Oh, just saying, I have that guy with the penis in the
barrel.
Yeah, whatever. All right, Chris from Brooklyn, you're the winner.
Wait,
email me.
I'm sorry, remind us again. What was Chris from Brooklyn's call?
The enema with the pulleys and the table that moves up so you can do your biz.
The enema table.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to see what that looks like. Because, hey, you know, the thing I was going to say is at work there's a massage chair.
We don't have time for this.
All right, there's a massage chair, and I was able to, like, you know, recline in it today with my feet up, and it was, like, pounding the back,
okay,
of, my,
bye.
The back of my back. All right, well, I guess we should end the show now that that's over with. You have been listening to Shut Up Weirdo here on WFMU. You can comment during the show at WFMU.org and visit our website at shutupweirdo.com, which has all the information you need for our meetup and Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Up next is Stuff You Should Know, then 8 o'clock, Mr. Fine Wine.
And 7:30's I'm Worth It.
You are listening to The Mobile Me, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. So let's...
End it here!
Yeah, we're ending it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck discuss gaming and casinos, and then in part two, they take a look at moon landing conspiracy theories. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Mm-hmm. The podcast.
Yes, it is. Chuck.
Josh.
How's it going?
Great. I'm excited about this one.
Really?
You know, my favorite casino, or favorite Scorsese movie's casino. We've talked about this.
No way. Is it really?
I think, I used to say it was a close second to Goodfellas, but I believe this is edge. I watched it again the other day, man, and I love Casino, the movie.
Okay, I'll give it
to you. It might edge Goodfellas out.
I can't believe you're saying that, but to each his own, we always say.
To me, it's like flip a coin. That, Mean Streets, and Goodfellas, just like either of those three, they're all different.
I've not seen Mean Streets. Should I?
Yeah, I mean that was the first one he did with De Niro. It's,
yeah, and Keitel. Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, casinos.
Casinos.
Go.
Well, now we've already talked about the movie, so are you still excited about this one?
No. Nah.
Okay. We get your favorite part out. I read that casino winnings for June in Las Vegas, Nevada, or in Nevada as a whole,
mm-hmm.
were up 16% over last year.
Hey, that's good.
Which is a good sign because one of the things that are pretty much recession-proof are stocks in vices, basically.
Yeah.
Like liquor company stock, tobacco company stock, and gambling company stock.
Mm-hmm.
By gambling company, of course, I mean like a casino or something like that. Yeah. But with the recession of 2008, even those kind of stocks were taking a hit. It was that much of a bath.
Wow.
So in the midst of all this talk about like a double dip recession and the downgrade by Moody's to AA+ for government bonds, the fact that the revenue in Nevada for gambling is up 16% is a good sign. Conversely, it's down like 8% in Atlantic City. But that's Atlantic City.
AC has struggled on and off over the years.
Since like the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even Trump took a bath there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes. So, I mean, you've been to plenty of casinos, right? You spend most of your time there.
Not true, but I've been to Vegas a bunch. Just living in L.A., you go more than
I'll bet.
Your average Joe might.
Yeah.
Because it's close. You can drive, work jobs there, film jobs and stuff.
I've been to Vegas a few times, and I think those are the only casinos I've ever been to.
I hate it.
Were ones in Vegas.
I hate Vegas now.
Do you?
Yeah, man. No, I'm done.
I like it. I like it if you go into Vegas with like a Vegas kind of mindset.
Yeah.
It's fun. I mean, I wouldn't ever spend like my yearly vacation there.
Right.
But I mean, a few days in Vegas, that's pretty cool. I like it.
Couple of.
I'm not a big gambler though either, so I don't go there and like, there's not a chance that I'm going to come out of there like, my life is ruined.
See, I love to gamble, but I don't do it.
I do too, but I'm not a big gambler. Like, I can walk away at any time.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I just enjoy it, but I don't do it, so it's weird to say that I love gambling.
What's your game?
Oh, you know, blackjack, sportsbook. I think I told you before on the show that I usually go into the sportsbook and throw down some bets, and depending how I do on those, I'll gamble with that money.
Gotcha.
At the tables.
Gotcha.
It's fun.
Okay. I'm going to have to try that next time. Because I usually just walk up to the roulette table and go, here's some money. Oh, I lost.
Oh,
here's
man.
A little more. Oh, I lost.
I've never lost money faster in my life than at a roulette table.
Yeah, it is pretty fast.
It just
but
disappears.
When it hits, it is thrilling.
I'm sure.
It is.
That's what they count on.
Yeah. So, Chuck, you know, casinos, well, gambling itself is pretty ancient. The Grabster, who wrote this article, and included a Monty Python reference. Did you catch it?
I don't know if I did.
He mentions the Italian Inquisition.
Oh, very nice.
The noble people expected the Italian Inquisition.
Pretty good.
And were never caught gambling. But there's been dice found in prehistoric sites.
That's awesome.
There's something called astragali, and they're carved knuckle bones that were the predecessors of dice.
Yeah, they look kind of like molars.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And then after that were actual primitive six-sided dice.
That's right.
And so we've been gambling. We've been shooting craps at least for eons.
A long time.
Well, at the very least for millennia. But casinos or places where you go to gamble didn't really come about until I think about the 15th or 16th century. And Venice was actually the birthplace of the casino, of the gambling hall.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's Italian.
Yeah.
It's initially there were these aristocrats in Italy would have these private parties at places called ridotti. And at the ridotti, it was a private club for rich folks, but it was basically a gambling club because that's what went on there.
Right. And this is where the Monty Python reference comes in, where it was illegal.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to gamble, but the aristocrats knew when to expect the Italian Inquisition.
Yeah, and they didn't do a lot of inquiring from what I understand, too.
Right. So, but it was known that, like, this is outlawed. But the, I guess, the fathers of Venice figured out that the people who were running the show there were making a ton of cash, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if they set up their own ridotto, right?
Mm-hmm.
They could make that cash themselves. So they did. They set up what was called the Ridotto,
yeah.
With a capital R.
I love that.
It was a four-story gambling house.
Yeah.
Where they took all these different games and just put them under one roof.
It was a casino.
It was the first casino, yeah.
Yeah, and they even did things like give you food and beverages and keep you happy. And like you said, ran a variety of games. And the Grabster points out this is a big deal for a couple of reasons. A, it's government-sanctioned gambling house for
right.
the first time, and it's open to the general public. You
yes.
can just go down to the Ridotto. throw down some cash.
You don't have to be an aristocrat or a noble person.
Nope.
You just go ahead and lay your money down.
That's right. And actually, the word casino is obviously Italian.
Right, but that was different. So that was 1638 that Venice opened the Rodotto. It didn't last forever.
No.
Eventually, the tide of public moral opinion turned against it, which happens a lot to gambling.
Yeah.
And the Rodotto was shut down. So the aristocrats went back to it again and went and started gambling again at what were called casinos, which are small little clubs, right?
Yeah, that's what it means.
A casino is a small little club.
Yeah.
And then they added gambling to it, and then hence the name that we know and love today, the casino.
Yeah, so the Rodotto was broken up into smaller casinos, and they were pretty popular and flourished.
Yeah, so that idea was exported from Italy, or there were other places where it just kind of came up on its own. But Italy, for the most part, is known as the birthplace of the casino.
Yeah, France was big in...
France is known as the birthplace of most of the casino games that we play today.
Yeah, yeah.
Roulette means little wheel in French.
Yeah.
Baccarat means Burt Baccarat in Burt Bacharach in French.
It means crystal. It's not true.
What else is there? Blackjack means 21, I believe, in French.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So basically, the French invented a lot of games because they loved to gamble.
They did. And so did the United States early on. In the 1800s, in the Wild West, there were gambling riverboats on the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Poker games and card games for money. And then kind of like with Prohibition, the moral conservatism kind of came on and stemmed the tide of gambling for a while up until the Hoover Dam and Nevada kind of really put it back on the map again.
Yeah,
they legalized gambling.
There was a huge, huge anti-gambling wave in like basically the first decade and a half of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And it almost wiped out horse racing entirely. Like there were like 250 horse racing tracks at like in 1900
wow.
in the U.S. And it went down to like 25 in like 30 years. So that same wave... basically broke up all gambling until, yeah, like you say, Nevada said, you know what? We're going to buck the trend.
Because there's not a lot going on here in Nevada.
But we do have a new dam.
Yeah.
We're going to call it Hoover Dam eventually, but for now, let's call it Bowler Dam.
And tourists got into coming and seeing it. Still do.
Yeah. It is a marvel. Still to this day, it's a marvel of, of engineering.
It's awesome.
It's the pinnacle of humans' contempt for nature, you know? Oh, you want to flow as a river? No. We tell you when to flow.
You're going to generate power for us instead.
Exactly. So from the get-go, Boulder Dam, now Hoover Dam, was a tourist attraction, and Nevada said, why not get some money off of these pork pies from Iowa while they come?
Mm-hmm.
Let's let them gamble.
And
that's
did that.
What happened.
And gambling and casinos had already been started. Bugsy Siegel did not start that, but he and Meyer Lansky, famous gangsters, did have a large hand in expanding the casino scene, famously with the Flamingo Hotel and Casino in 1946.
Yes. And that was a good movie, too.
That was a great movie,
yeah.
Bugsy. And today, I think this number is still right, 19 of the 25 largest hotels by room number are on the Las Vegas Strip.
The largest in the world, 25 largest in the world?
Yeah.
I can believe that.
Sure.
They're huge.
And that's just, they're still gambling downtown, too.
Go
to Fremont if you really want the real Las Vegas.
Yeah, so that's how it started. There were downtown gambling houses. And then they figured out that if you got to break some eggs to make an omelet.
Yeah.
So they spent some money to make tons of money.
Tons of omelets.
Yeah. And they also, in a very unusual kind of agreement, these early strip makers said, you know what, we're all going to go into this together. Sure, it's more competition, but if we're concentrated, we make this a destination. Not only is Nevada a destination for gambling, but this specific spot in Nevada is the destination for gambling.
That's right.
And it paid off, like in aces.
Hey,
yeah.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, and since we're on gangsters, the mafia had a lot to do with the Las Vegas casino operation for a long time until they eventually, money kind of won out, and real estate developers had more money than the mob.
Yeah.
And said, you know what, we need to clean this up and make it legit and buy you out, essentially.
Yeah.
And As I understand it, it's mafia doesn't have anything to do with it these days because it's just too big of a risk.
Yeah, and their money's not needed. For a while there, they had the money, and they also had the willingness, too. One of the reasons the mob got into Vegas was because the rest of the country saw Vegas as Sin City. It's a it's a place of ill repute. Gambling is sinful, and we're morally opposed to it. So I don't want my customers at my bank to withdraw their money so I can invest in your casino.
Right.
But then Meyer Lansky or...
said there's other ways of getting money.
Right. He said, you know what? I've got no problem with this.
Yeah.
Here's some money. The Teamsters were heavily invested in Vegas.
That's true.
But yeah, but then Trump was like, I got way more money than you guys.
Yeah, and that's why one reason Vegas was Sin City for a long time. And you can still get into some trouble there, but since the 90s, it has become a much more of a family destination.
It's starting to swing back the other way a little more.
I hear they're trying to do that. Some casinos are opening up with like rules against kids and...
Oh, yeah. Plenty of them have it. Yeah. It's like, get your kid out of here.
But there's also...
This is a casino
Circus,
for God's
Circus
sake.
And Excalibur and with like nothing but kids. Treasure Island.
Yeah.
All those places.
Yeah. Ooh. And so, and we should say, Chuck, that we just gave like the history of Vegas. And Vegas is obviously like the crown jewel of the gambling world around the world.
Sure.
But there's also other like just world-class casinos like Monaco, Monte Carlo, a city in Monaco, which is a principality built exclusively on gambling money.
Yeah, like Vegas.
There's Macau is off the coast of Hong Kong. That's like gambling paradise now.
Yeah.
There's where else is there?
There's riverboats. There's
Reno.
Indian reservations.
Yeah. So it's we didn't mean to neglect anybody, I guess is what I'm saying. And the you know that four-story gambling house, the Redondo.
Yeah.
That has translated very very well in Japan. They have things that are called pachinko parlors, which are usually pachinko. Multi-story outfits where you just
is it all pachinko?
The first floor is usually all pachinko.
Gotcha.
And it's also like you can go in there and play all day and no one will know because you can't see through the cigarette smoke in there. It is crazy.
I bet.
Yeah.
They smoke a lot over there.
So there's gambling all over the world. We're aware of that.
Yeah, I got some stats, some gaming stats. In 2009, 70% of U.S. adults placed a wager of some kind to the tune of $900 billion at casinos, racetracks, lottery, and then like poker games and dog tracks and OTB places and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think of that, gross gaming revenue was $80.5 billion, and about $57 billion of that was casino-based, whether land or riverboat casinos.
Wow.
$30 billion, 26 of that was from tribal casinos, and the other 30 was from just standard casinos.
That's definitely up from when this article was written, because it was $22.62 billion in 2005 for Native American casinos and $31.85 billion for everything else in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. That's significant.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody, and that's 41 states. 41 states have casinos or allow casinos. Georgia's not one of them.
No, but Georgia allows gambling in the form of lotteries.
Yes, and everything.
And video poker.
Yeah, everything but Hawaii and Utah allow some form of wagering.
Right.
I wonder what Hawaii's deal is.
I don't know.
Utah makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But Hawaii.
I have no idea what Hawaii's.
Maybe they're just like, we don't need that.
Yeah. I'll find out.
We're surfing, eating spam.
Right, exactly. It's a spamcation.
Sure.
So, Chuck, why is there so much money in gambling? If it's all games of chance.
Yeah.
Why is there so much money in owning a casino?
You know why, Josh?
Why?
Because every single game a casino offers has a statistical edge built in for the casino. Otherwise, that's how they make their dough.
Yep. That is there's your fact. These are not
everyone
games
knows
of chance.
That.
I didn't know that.
Sure. Well, it ranges from I think about the lowest you can get is Baccarat. At about 1.6%.
It can go as low as, I think,
0.7?
0.6 something, yeah.
Is the casino advantage, all the way up to the sucker's bet of all time, which is the slot machine, which gives the casino a 25% edge on average.
And the reason it stops at 25% is because by law, most most states say if you're going to have slots or video poker or whatever, since it's computer operated randomly, I'm making air quotes, you have to set it so that there's 75% of the time they have a chance of winning.
Yeah.
25% of the time you're playing that, you have no chance of winning.
Yeah, and they'll change the slot. Some casinos will say, like, our slots pay out 80% or 90% to try and get you in there. But that is where the casino makes 70% of their revenue is from slots.
It's from slots.
Nickel slots, quarter slots, whatever.
Whatever slots.
Yeah.
Are we talking about games?
Yeah, let's get into it.
So, yeah, if you go to a casino, there's obviously going to be slots, and they are absolutely everywhere. I've never been a big slot guy. It's just over too fast. There's not too much to it.
Boring.
It is a little boring. I like blackjack.
Blackjack's a lot of fun.
I played blackjack in Paris, in Vegas, and it was like the middle of the day, and my brother-in-law and I were the only ones at the table, and I was like, hit me, and the guy hit me, and I was like, hit me again, and the dealer went and just shook his head.
I've had them do that too.
And
very subtly,
I was like, oh, okay.
Dude, you don't want to hit.
Yeah, and I'm sure the pit boss is like, you know, he's got X number of times he can do that in a day or whatever. But
yeah,
I thought it was very nice. I ended up spending more money, I'm sure.
Well, that's exactly why he did it.
Yeah.
They want to keep your butt in that chair, and sometimes they might allow the dealer to say, like, are you certain, sir?
Wait a minute. He didn't do it to be nice.
He may have been being nice.
He was definitely being nice, but yes, I'm sure overall.
He may be instructed. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works on the inside.
But yeah, I was told not to. He said no when I told him to hit me.
Right.
And I came out a little bit on top, I think.
So blackjack, Josh, you got about a 2% house edge. Not bad as far as gambling goes. And if you play by the statistical strategy that they say you should play by, there are rules. Like, if you follow this, then chances are you could win some money. But
right.
People, what happens is you get caught up, you like hit when you shouldn't, you lay down more money to try and make up for what you've lost.
Yeah.
And that's when they take you.
Yeah.
Or you can count cards.
And you can count cards.
Which is legal.
If you go to MIT, they'll teach you how to count cards, right? And that what that movie was about?
Yeah, the MIT blackjack team. From the movie 21.
If you count cards and they figure out that you're counting cards, you're gone. Like, I don't think they can break your hand, but you're out of the casino for sure.
They can do a lot of things up until that point to make it harder, but I think if they verify that and they know that you're counting cards, I think they can ask you to leave, even though it is not against the law.
No, but a casino has rules against it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so that's blackjack. Got to come closest to 21 without going over.
Oh, yeah, did we say that?
Yeah, and we're not going to break down each of these games so specifically.
No, each of these could have their own podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
They won't, but they could.
So that's that. Slots. By the way, there are spam slots. Yeah.
That's cool.
Boogie night
you
slots.
Know what? That's what we need. We need a stuff you should know slot machine.
Well, there are all kinds of crazy themes. Boogie nights, the Terminator.
I mean, do you realize how much we would have arrived
awesome.
If we had our own slot machines?
That'd be cool.
We'd go broke playing them.
I bet we could make that happen.
I don't know about that. No.
Okay.
So you got boogie nights.
Oh, yeah, just all sorts of crazy themes. And recently it was in the news because there are Happy Days machines, and everyone but Fonzie and Richie sued because they're like, dude, we're not seeing any money from these slot machines that all my friends are telling me that our faces are on.
That's what Happy Days sued for? I thought it was like DVDs.
No, no, no.
Like
it's all sorts of back payment that they say they're not getting, but the slots is what tipped off the mom. Like, someone called her, was like, oh, I saw you on a slot machine. She's like, really?
Huh.
So she banded together with Potsy and...
Everybody except Fonzie and...
And Richie.
Richie.
Because they still have money.
Yeah. Wow.
That's an awful thing to say. Yeah.
I imagine that they didn't... When I read that, I didn't know that it was slot machines that tipped them off, but I thought, I hope Ron Howard, like, paid for their legal team.
Yeah. I think they just settled recently, actually.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Roulette, of course, one of my favorites.
Yeah, if you want to see your money disappear before your very eyes, go play some roulette.
Yeah, so there's 36 spaces on a little wheel. Numbers 1 through... No, I'm sorry, there's 38 spaces. Numbers 1 through 36 with a 0 and a double 0, right?
Yeah.
Very, very simply put, the dealer spins the wheel.
You got black and red, too.
Yeah, well, you can bet on all sorts of things.
Sure.
There's the table where you can bet on it being...
A color.
Landing on a black or a red color. You can bet on the specific number and the color.
Does just anyone ever win that? Like, I'm going to bet on 22, and it comes up.
And it pays off when it
Well,
does.
Yeah.
And depending if you – I think it pays 2-1 if you correctly bet on red or black, and then it just gets more
it
involved
escalates.
From there.
Yeah.
But the dealer spins a wheel, and then a ball is dropped in, and it spins around and bounces, and then whatever number color it lands on, if you bet on that, baby, you are rolling in it. But I think the roulette, I think the reason I like it, it's just so, it's such an elegant game. There's a wheel that spins and it's
you feel
like
you're in Monte Carlo.
I very much so.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like roulette the most.
House Edge is between 5 and 7%, even though it varies because there's so many different bets and payouts.
Right.
Craps.
Craps I know almost nothing about.
It's the most fun game in Vegas or at a casino, in my opinion. It's the most social game. You hear a lot of people having a lot of fun, and chances are it's coming from the crap section.
Yeah.
Because you're involved, you're throwing the dice, that has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice, if you want to play craps, it's really complicated with all the bets, but make it really easy and pick out, like, learn two or three little simple bets that you can make and just stick to those.
Okay. That's good advice.
That's my advice. Unless you're really good and you know all that stuff, then just go wild.
Right. If you know all that stuff, you're probably not going to take our advice on craps.
Keno, Josh, is a big ripoff.
Well, it's a lottery.
Yeah.
Inside the casino. There was a scandal. Some guy from Vegas who worked at the Nevada Gaming Commission, they use random number generators to just run the Keno games. Right?
Sure.
It's all computer operated. The thing is there's no such thing as randomness with a computer. Like, it just doesn't exist. It's a
right.
computer, right?
So it's a program.
So this guy figured out basically the pattern that comes up, the underlying pattern
wow.
to all of it. And he and a buddy went to Atlantic City, and he stayed up in the room and watched the Keno play out basically on their TV.
Uh-huh.
And he called down to the guy and told him what to bet based on what numbers were about to come up. And this guy won so much that security followed him up to the room and found the guy there, found out he was from Vegas, and were like, why'd you come to Atlantic City to play Keno? And that was that. That was in an article in Harper's, I think.
Do you know what happened to him?
He got busted, I'm sure.
Is there a new hole in the gambling desert any longer. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if Atlantic City has that kind of pull in Vegas, though, where they can, you know, rub you out.
They don't dig a hole in the desert there. They just do the old cement shoes in the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Sleeps with the fishes.
Toss you off the boardwalk.
Yeah. But then you have to pay for the guy you just killed to the people in Vegas, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You got Baccarat, which we've talked about. And if you've never played it, it seems complicated, but it's really not. The object is to get close to 9 instead of 21, but you only get 2 or 3 cards. And the total, if it's more than 10, you defer to the right-hand number. So if you get a 9 and a 6, your hand isn't 15, your hand is 5.
What? If you get a 9 and a 6, your hand isn't 15. It's 5.
Yep.
Where does the 5 come from in there?
1, 5. It's the digit on the right-hand side. If your hand totals 13, your hand is really a 3. If it's a 12,
right, but
it's
a 9
really
and a
2.
6, there's no 5 in there?
No, a 9 and a 6 total 15.
Oh, I got you. So
yeah,
you
yeah.
add it up and then take the right-hand digit of the double digit.
Yes.
Okay.
And
oh,
your object is, it's not easy, but it sort of is easy.
That I've never played because, as is pointed out in the article, like, it's usually
high rollers
away from the rest of the casino. And, yeah, it's like you have to be wearing a tux to get into the Baccarat
it's
part.
It's typically known as a big money game.
Yeah.
Because, you know why? It's because it's got the best or the least amount of statistical advantage. So if you've got a lot of money, you're probably smarter to be playing Baccarat.
Yeah, and because of that low statistical advantage, a lot of times casinos say, hey, thanks for playing. You owe us 3% of everything you just won.
Yeah, I think Baccarat is one of those that takes it off the top, right?
Is that right?
I think so.
I would imagine poker's like that as well. It's called a rake in poker.
Yeah, they essentially just what you're doing in poker is they're hosting the game, essentially, and supplying you with a dealer
right.
for a fee.
Right, so there. Sometimes you're charged, the rake will be based on how long you spend in there or how much you win, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But poker's poker.
That's right.
Right? And then there's video poker, which is pretty close to slots. It has laws that say you have to pay out
yeah.
X percentage of time, that kind of thing.
Another sucker game, if you ask me.
Yeah, they have those all over the place here in Atlanta, like in gas stations and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and interestingly, slots and video poker aren't monitored. They're just set up, and you just go play. They don't have, like, cameras above each one like they do all the other games.
Yeah. Well, they don't have people watching the slots area or video poker.
They're self-managed, essentially.
Yeah. So, Chuck, let's talk about the casino experience, shall we?
Well, they get you in there. They load you up on liquor while you're playing for free, which helps. They give you food comps sometimes, like, hey, sir, would you like two buffet tickets here? And
would I?
They won't
you
show
had
you.
Me at two.
They won't show you any clocks. You won't find any big clocks or windows in casinos.
To this day, they the whole thing is designed to basically, I guess, simulate eternal twilight, early evening.
Yeah.
The night's just
the lights are dim.
Still young.
And that is the weird thing. When you can't tell, and people gamble at all hours. That's why I was surprised. Like, you'll go down at 4 in the morning, and you can't tell the difference between that and noon.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
A little creepy.
It is very creepy.
They do not pump in oxygen.
No, they don't. Apparently, that would be extremely illegal, which makes sense.
It's a felony.
It's basically drugging people. But the whole premise of that was that you basically gave people a rush, or it kept them awake.
Yeah.
So they would stay and not get tired.
Yeah.
Contrary to that, like you said, people will often be comped, food, drinks.
Rooms.
Kind of drunk. You might spend a little more. But yes, if you are lucky enough to be comped a room and you're a slot person, you're probably a member of the slot club.
Yeah.
Which you need to join when you check in. It usually doesn't cost anything, but basically you have a card that tracks your play.
Sure.
And you don't want to be bashful about this. You don't want them to notice you. You want to, if you're looking to get comped, you go ahead and let them know you're here to play.
Yeah, and if you want to get comped and you're not a slot person, you can just ask. If you have a lot of money you want to spend and you're like, this is what I'm going to start doing this, you tell them, you go to someone and say, hey, I need to get my play rated. And they will basically just put you on a list and say, okay, we'll start tracking and seeing what kind of money you're losing.
Right. But as the Grabster points out, it is a sucker bet to spend more than you normally would or
to
stay
comped.
Longer
yeah.
just to get comped.
That's dumb.
Because you're going to spend more money in losses than you would just having gotten the room or gotten the buffet.
Yeah, and Vegas is still cheaper maybe than some places, but it's not like the old days where it was like a hotel room is $20 and the buffet is $5.95. Like it's a vacation destination now. They get you with the room charges now too.
Or the shows.
The shows.
Awesome shows.
The kids, they got stuff for the whole family now to keep everyone busy while mom and dad are giving away their money,
exactly.
their college fund.
Right. So Chuck, security's kind of an issue, right?
Yeah.
There's the ubiquitous eye in the sky, which apparently they don't necessarily have over the slot areas.
Yeah, every other table's got a camera watching it.
And the whole process of security is ground up, right? The first defense in I guess against cheating or fraud or theft is the dealer, him or herself.
Yeah.
Because they're really paying attention to the game. And they're going to see clear as day if you're palming cards or counting cards, whatever you're doing.
They're trained to look out for that stuff.
Right. And they know this game is literally their job to play this game every day for hours on end. So they know if something's weird about it, right?
Yeah. And then above them, you got table managers and pit bosses watching out over an area.
Right. And they're not just watching customers. They're watching the dealers.
Sure.
And the managers.
Sure.
Everybody's watching everybody else.
Yeah. God, that was a great part in Casino.
Yeah.
When they break down the security.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry. I had a moment there. God, that when he busts the country bumpkin who's got taken on the slots.
Yeah.
And his country bumpkin uncle tried to get him like reinstated. And De Niro's like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
He's like, you sure you want to think about this? And he has that great line. He's like, what you people don't ever realize is that you're all just guests here.
Yeah.
And he's right, because he eventually left.
The guy who got taken on the slots, his name was, he used to host like a B-movie drive-in show.
Like Billy Bob something?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah, agreed.
I can't remember. He was great, though. He was a pretty funny dude. And I don't know what happened to him.
He's around, I'm sure.
Okay. And then above that, you have security who are monitoring everything on TV, right?
Lots and lots of TVs. Lots and lots of cameras. And they can train each one to look at whatever they want. Like, it's not just the tables, all the ins and outs, the exits, the bathroom, not in the bathrooms, but these are all heavily policed by cameras. And
I don't know. I could see them monitoring the bathrooms.
I could see that too, actually.
Yeah.
And in Ocean's 11, if you remember, mm-hmm. one of the little tricks they used to get the cameras out of the way was Casey Affleck and James Caan's kid. What's his name?
James Caan's kid.
They got in the argument, and he let go of the balloons, and the balloons covered the camera just long enough to get whatever they needed to get done.
Yeah.
That was a great movie, too.
Yeah.
The first one was really good, I think. And not the original. I mean the first Soderbergh.
Right.
Okay.
The original was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I can watch that, like, all day, every day.
True. I like the redo as well, though.
Okay. I thought it was glib.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Matt was glib?
I thought the whole thing was glib. So, Chuck, if you're a chump like me and you walk around casinos with, like, your money in your hands, right, just kind of smiling at people, like, where do I put this?
Yeah.
How do you stay on security's good side?
Well,
since you're the casino expert.
Here's a few tips. You don't want to touch any of the gaming equipment. Like, don't grab the roulette wheel and say, this feels neato. They say not to use two hands to do anything.
Right.
Like, always kind of keep one hand off the stuff.
And it doesn't hurt to keep the other hand in sight, the hand you're not using, sight on the table.
Yeah, don't go up to a craps table with, like, one hand in your pocket and then, like, lower the dice below the table and then blow on them and then throw them.
And also, don't ever, ever tickle the dealer. They don't like that.
Yes. You're not supposed to. You can't hand your money to a dealer. Always lay your money on the table.
Put it on the table. And don't expect them to cash anything out. They'll give you chips, but when you want your chips to turn back into money, the dealer's not going to help you.
Which we should mention, the reason they use chips is A, to keep track of things easier, and B, because you feel a lot better losing a chip than you do a $100 bill.
Yeah. It's just like a debit card.
That's right.
Like, there's so many things that you normally just wouldn't buy if you had to shell out cash for it.
Yeah.
But you totally get because it's a debit card.
Yeah. You can watch people play, but just watch. Don't go up to people at the table and start talking to them.
Don't tickle other players.
Don't tickle players. Don't touch your chips after you've placed a bet. It's final once you put it down. Don't reach across the table and knock over everyone else's chips. Ask for some help.
Yeah.
And don't, like, put your drink on the table. Although, I've done that.
People do that.
They say not to do that, but I've done that.
I don't think it's the end of the world.
Agreed.
Especially blackjack. There's no other place to put it, usually. There might be, like, a little thing right here hanging off the edge of the table. A lot of times, it's just, what am I going to do?
Exactly.
So, Chuck, we talked about riverboat gambling and Native American casinos.
Yes.
And both of those are fairly recent in origin, really about the early 1990s, late 80s, right?
Yeah.
So Native American casinos, their existence can be traced back to one guy. He was the head of the Cabazon tribe from California, and his name was Arthur James Wellmiss, and basically he figured out a loophole in the way that Native American territory is treated. It is technically sovereign ground, right?
Yes.
But criminal law extends into the sovereign area. So if you murder somebody, you committed a crime, and the federal government has jurisdiction to investigate that crime. But if something is legal in that state where that territory is, then by extension, there's no crime that could possibly be committed if that is carried out within the Native American territory. It becomes a matter of civil law. Civil law doesn't extend into Native American territory, right?
Yeah, so basically they said, hey, if you can allow gambling in California and our reservations in California,
even if it's just a lottery.
Yeah, then we can do that here however we want.
Because it's a civil matter.
Exactly.
And as an aside related to that, if you fall and break your leg at a Native American casino, you're not going to be able to sue anybody. No redress for that.
No redress. And riverboats, Josh, how that usually works is You go on a cruise, quote unquote.
2-hour cruise.
But it's not so much a cruise because you don't go anywhere. The boat just stays there, and that's just your allotted time.
2 hours.
And it is specific, and you can't just say, can I stay a little longer?
No, they're probably like, no, but you can leave and then come back.
Yeah, and a lot of times they'll have a loss limit, too. They'll be like, you can't lose over $500.
Right. But apparently, much the same way with the government in Venice, state legislatures have been like, well, you know, we've really come to depend on this riverboat gambling tax money. So, you know what? Go crazy.
Right.
Go nuts. Stay on as long as you want. Lose as much as you like. We are rolling in it because of you. So, Chuck, I guess if a casino comes to your town, anybody who's ever seen that Simpsons episode knows that it's a boon for the community, right?
Big business, dude. Everyone's happy. Everyone's making tons of money off of it.
Everybody's got jobs.
Like, it's money for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Not true.
No. So studies show that there's actually a negative economic impact on a local community by a casino. And it's pretty simple why. Most casinos' play is carried out by locals who come into the casino and lose their money. Not necessarily
tourists.
By tourists who wouldn't have come there otherwise and are having an economic impact. That definitely accounts for a substantial portion, but when you take it all into account, the local economy actually loses money when a casino comes to town.
That's right, Josh.
At least several studies have shown that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we'll get into gambling maybe on a different show, but we should point out that the dark side of casinos is about 25% of their profits are generated from the 5% of addicted gamblers.
Yes.
So that's a lot. 25% of their profits are coming from people who have gambling problems.
Right, and probably most of those people live like down the street.
Yeah, maybe even work at casinos.
Yeah.
We should do one on gambling. There's so much more there.
We will.
I don't want to breeze over that.
Okay. So that's it for casinos, though. If you want to know how craps works, we have a How Craps Works article.
Yeah.
We have articles on most of the games that we talked about in here. You can type any of those up, or you can find links to them within the casino article. You can just type casino, C-A-S-I-N-O, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Which means social club.
It's a casino.
In the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com, which means it's time for listener mail.
Josh, this one I'm going to call kind of gross, but funny. Just listen to Can You Sweat Colors, guys. It brought to mind a harrowing question that my friends and I have been grappling with for years. Sit down and prepare yourself for this.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Would you rather sweat ranch dressing or always smell like Chinese food? And here are the clarifications. You would only sweat the ranch dressing in times that would normally cause you to sweat. The ranch dressing is consumable.
Oh, well, that's a plus.
The Chinese food smell is the general smell of a small Chinese food takeout joint. No amount of washing will make you not smell like Chinese food, nor will perfumes and colognes abolish the smell. They will simply complement it. Let me know, guys. P.S. Follow me on Twitter. It would make me feel special. That is Clay, C-L-A-Y, capital G-N, on Twitter.
A.K.A. Clay Aiken.
His name is Clayton N. So, Clayton, my answer is I would rather smell like Chinese food because I'm such a heavy sweater, the ranch thing would just be infinitely more embarrassing.
I wish you'd sweat ranch.
And you could always explain away the Chinese food saying, God, sorry, man, I just went and had Chinese food. But right, you can't explain ranch sweat.
No. Neither can medical science.
What's
my
your answer?
My answer is neither.
Although my friend Eddie loves ranch dressing so much, he might elect for that.
Yeah.
He would just sweat over his pizza.
Nice. If you have a question for us, unanswerable or otherwise, and you want to tweet it to us, we're always on Twitter. It's SYSK Podcast. Tweet to that. You can go like us on Facebook, Stuff You Should Know. That's facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can always send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called How Casinos Work, originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on September 13th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine moon landing conspiracies and the people who love them. This episode was originally podcast on February 3rd, 2009.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. there is Chuck Bryant.
Why you tickled, Josh?
I'm just tickled. You know exactly why.
I know.
Things take place and transpire before the stuff starts recording.
True.
Yes.
And we just bring it.
Exactly. And sometimes we bring it laughing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rainbow kind of world out there.
It is.
So, Chuck, let's talk about whether or not we landed on the moon. I have no intro for this one. Let's just get into it, okay?
Yeah.
Let's take the gloves off. Let's go to town.
There are people that think that we did not land on the moon in 1969.
That is true. And actually, there is a guy who worked for, I don't remember, maybe the Rocketdyne Systems.
Okay.
Rocketdyne Systems, which I believe is a private aerospace contractor. A guy named Bill Casing, he wrote technical publications for that company.
Wow.
And in 1959, he calculated that there was a 0.0014% chance of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely home.
He was wrong.
10 years later, we had men on the moon, returned them safely home.
Right. So we think.
Or did we? I don't think we should take a conspiratorial tone. I also don't think we should take pot shots at the crackpots who think this.
So what are we going to talk about?
Well, I think we can discuss the merits of this stuff.
Report the news.
In my opinion, skepticism goes both ways.
Uh-huh.
Right? Skepticism is always focused on the people who, you know, question reality. And I think that's BS. I think there's plenty of times where you can question what's being fed
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm big on that, actually. And if I was around in 1969, I probably would have,
In 1969, you would have been Woodstock, the whole shebang.
Maybe so.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get down to it. Right?
Let's do it.
Do you want to tee off?
Yeah. Like we said, a lot of people, well, I don't know how many, but there was a conspiracy theory going around, still is today, that we never landed on the moon, and there are quite a few points that people make to try and back this up.
Yes.
From the footage of the moon landing.
Yeah.
And they basically think it was staged for the purposes of making the Russians so disheveled at the fact that we got to the moon before they did, that they would scrap their program and just say, you know, the Americans are so far ahead of us because they're already on the moon and we can't do that.
Well, not just that, national pride as well. Like,
sure.
You know, back in the 60s, this is like at the height of the Cold War, and basically the Soviet Union and the United States spent much in political and actual, you know, financial capital
mm-hmm.
to make one another look bad.
True.
That was pretty much the role of each of these nations.
Right.
The world was polarized. And what better way to make the other one look like a jackass than by beating them to the moon?
Yeah, true.
It was a space race.
Yeah. So I see the theory behind this whole thing.
Yeah, but, you know, Kennedy said in, what, 1960?
Uh-huh.
We're going to put a man on the moon. And by 1969, we had. That is enormous. Like, we had no moon landing program.
Right.
By then. We'd been shooting satellites into space, and we had men who had orbited by then.
Right.
But within 9 years, we actually landed somebody on the moon.
Right. And this is 1960s technology, too. So it's not, I mean, today it would seem like that wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world to do. But back then it was just unheard of.
Right. Okay. So, like you said, most of the bones of contention that people use to pick this idea apart are based on the footage.
Correct.
Of you know, there's actual evidence here saying, you know, what's going on? What is this? Explain this.
Right. There's five main points that are generally brought up in this discussion.
There's actually a few more, but yeah, in this article, there's five. Our esteemed colleague John Fuller waded through the muck and picked out the best ones.
Right.
Polished them off. Mm-hmm. Set them up. There you go.
Let's talk about them.
Okay. What's the first one?
Well, the first one that I'd like to mention is actually not the first one. The first one I'd like to mention is the quote-unquote sea rock, as in the letter C.
Yeah. Have you seen the sea rock?
Yeah. I looked up a picture today, and basically there's a rock in the foreground of a photo, and the shot is of one of the astronauts walking away from camera toward the lunar rover,
mm-hmm.
and there's a big moon rock in the foreground that looks like it's got a very clear letter C on it.
It is clearly a C.
It is clearly a
C. I mean, it doesn't look like some sort of aberration or anything like that.
Correct.
It looks like the letter C carved into it,
mm-hmm.
or maybe like stamped with like metal and a chisel.
Perhaps.
Something like that. But it definitely looks like a C.
I would agree with you.
And so, of course, theorists, we're not going to call them conspiracy theorists. We'll just call them theorists.
Yeah. Theorists think that this could be a prop, like a stage prop, that was marked, you know, Moonrock C, put it here, Moonrock B, put it there. And that it just kind of got by the camera department who was filming this big hoax.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you put that one first, because this one, in my opinion, has the weakest explanation from the scientific community and NASA for that
right.
C on that rock.
Spill it.
And that is basically that there was a hair on the lens.
Right.
Or something like that that had to do with when the photo was taken. It's not really a C. It's like a hair.
Yeah.
Or a scratch.
Right. Some sort
and
of flaw.
It doesn't look anything like a hair or a scratch.
No, it looks like the letter C.
Clearly, it looks like a C.
Right. So there's one.
That is definitely one.
Mm-hmm.
One that I like is the different shadow lengths.
Correct.
Have you seen pictures of them with the different shadows?
I have not.
They're wildly varying in length, and there's they're guys standing next to one another on the moon,
uh-huh.
but and then one shadow is 10 feet long, the other's is 40.
Right.
So I guess the basic idea behind this is evidence that the moon landing was faked is that there was some sort of faulty studio.
Right, they didn't light it properly.
Yeah, like the basic idea is that this is all done on a soundstage.
Right.
Now, in my opinion, this one is actually the weakest argument for the moon landing being fake.
Agreed.
First of all, the moon is not a flat, smooth surface. It's very rocky and dusty, and it has all sorts of features to it. And anybody who has ever stood on a along a desert or something similar to the moon,
right.
and seeing their shadow, they've noticed that the shadows don't always act the same way.
Right.
And what's more, in my opinion, if NASA was actually going to go to the trouble of faking a moon landing, they would have noticed this.
Right.
And they wouldn't have released it with the shadows like that badly off. That
right.
skewed.
That's my big point.
As a matter of fact, they probably would have gone the other way.
Sure.
And the shadows would have looked uniform or something like that, right?
Exactly. That's my point. This was 1969. This wasn't like 1925, They were actually making – I looked up films that were released in 1969 and, mm-hmm. Some really good movies.
But you got French Connection? Was that 69?
No, like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, that kind of thing.
Oh, gotcha.
But anyway, some really good movies, and filmmaking had advanced to the point where they could have easily gotten someone to make the shadows match and light it properly, and that they – wouldn't have had some crack team of interns out there filming the moon landing.
Yeah, right.
I don't. That didn't hold water with me.
Well, what's your next best argument for or against?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and skip over to the American flag. A lot of people seem to notice that when they're putting the flag up, that it appears to flap in the breeze. Of course, this is on the moon. There's no atmosphere, so there would be no breeze. But what they say, what the government says is. Is this was a special flag, and actually I didn't know this. I felt like a dummy. It's got a wire running across the top of it, which is why it hangs square. Otherwise, it would just hang limp in zero gravity.
Yeah, it should just be limp and motionless, basically.
Right. So when you have a flag with like a taut wire and you're putting it up, it's going to move around a little bit more, and it's not going to look like a regular flag.
Yeah.
So it's not, in fact, the breeze blowing. It's just, by virtue of the fact that it had a wire running through it.
Right. And as Fuller points out, if they had created a soundstage and filmed it like this and the wire wasn't in there, they would have had to have created a vacuum.
Correct.
In it, which would have been really difficult to.
Yeah, yeah.
Another part of that has to do with that vacuum soundstage that would have been virtually impossible to do is the dust that's being kicked up.
Right, when they walk.
When they walk or when the lunar rover is the tires are spinning.
Mm-hmm.
This is not so much a piece of evidence, but an explanation or something that people have noticed is that supposedly it's kind of clouding. And apparently it hasn't. It doesn't cloud at all. The dust is kicked up and it runs its course in that thin atmosphere and then falls back down.
Right.
And so that kind of actually proves that this thing either was filmed in a soundstage, in a vacuumized soundstage, or on the moon.
Right.
Occam's razor would actually kind of suggest the vacuumized soundstage, I think, at that point, but still.
Well, they can create an entire vacuum, a soundstage, but they can't light it properly? Is that...
That's a great point, Chuck.
Come on.
That's a great point, and that kind of reveals what's going on with this. This is never going to be resolved to everyone's satisfaction, I think. I think people enjoy kind of poking at one another on this.
I think so.
Like making NASA scientists respond.
Right.
Like they don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, the fact that... They could never have pulled this off, though. They can't. They couldn't have duped the entire scientific community all over the world.
Not only that, yes, Russia as well. Like, you would think if
they try to poke holes in it,
Russia would go public with this faster than you could say lickety-split.
Mm-hmm.
There is somebody has actually explained that as well. Supposedly, right after the moon landing, a guy named Ralph René points out that the U.S. started sending very secret humanitarian aid, massive amounts of grain, to the Soviet Union very quietly.
Uh-huh.
And basically, we wouldn't normally do that through our normal policy.
Right.
We had no reason to send them humanitarian aid. They were our greatest enemy.
Right.
We're doing it secretly. And if we were doing it, wouldn't we have said, hey, you know, we're helping out our enemy because we're all humans, that kind of thing.
Right.
Wouldn't it have been more public?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a tenuous argument, but it's something to chew over, right?
True. I say
that could have kept the Russians quiet.
I say niet to that, Josh.
You know, I'm starting to, you're starting to win me over, Chuck. Yeah. You are. But you said one reason that this whole thing would have been faked, the moon landing would have been faked, was because of the space race.
Right.
The Cold War. What about money?
Well, true. It would have cost a lot of money to put, and in fact did cost a lot of money to put someone on the moon.
Yeah, from 1958 to 2008, by my calculations, NASA's gotten about $750 billion in change in funding over the 50-year period. That's a big slush fund if you think about it.
It is.
It's just like you have no money to account for any longer. It's in space.
True. That's our bailout right there.
So why isn't this settled? Think about this. We're going into space all the time.
True.
The reason why is that we went to the moon. Oh, another explanation is that it served as a distraction for the Vietnam War.
Right.
Right? America was like, woo, we're going to the moon. You know, forget about the American soldiers that are dying over there.
Right.
And actually, suspiciously, the last time we landed on the moon was 1972, toward the end of the Vietnam War.
Interesting.
And then all of a sudden, if you look at NASA's funding year by year, it drops in half for about a decade until it started up again in the 80s when you and I were very interested in it as youngsters, right?
Right. So does the tail wag the dog, Josh, or does the dog wag the tail?
I can't answer that. But speaking of wag the dog, if it was faked, think about how many people were greased by the CIA right after they played their role as like a production assistant or a director or something like that.
You mean greased as in paid off or as in killed?
I mean killed.
Okay.
Waxed.
Right.
Yeah. But again, why isn't this solved? So we stopped going to the moon, or we stopped landing on the moon after 1972. We haven't been back. But we have sent some, you know, lunar orbiters around the moon with really great cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just say, here is the lunar lander, dummy, and here are the footprints, dummy.
Right.
Why aren't we doing that? You know why?
Because it's not worth the money to do that, right?
No, they're actually going around the moon. And they're taking photos of the moon's surface. And going over it. The problem is the camera resolution, which are these incredible cameras, are still not picking up. They don't have the resolution to pick up these objects on the moon surface. Yeah.
Sounds shady to me.
It does sound a little shady. So we'll see. There's a few out there right now. India has the Chandrayaan, I believe is the pronunciation, orbiter. Japan has the Kaguya orbiter. My Japanese is rusty.
That's good, though. Yeah. That sounds good to me.
And then the U.S. is the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. Uh-huh. They're all orbiting the moon right now, and they all possibly have good enough cameras to send back photos of the Apollo moon landings.
Well, hopefully that happens one day.
Yeah. So
we can just put this to bed once and for all.
Put it to rest. Again, I still think people just say, well, they faked those.
True.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
We've got India in our pockets. So that's it?
Well, not quite.
Well, you want to? Oh no, you got to. No, you have reader mail.
Yes.
So you want to let the moon landing conspiracy one just kind of peter out?
Sure. Fade into the galaxy.
How about a moment of silence?
Okay.
All right. That's listener good. Mail time. Chuck.
Listener mail time. Josh, I'm going to call this one exceptional fan mail, as I like to do.
Nice. Now, this isn't stuff we should have known?
No. This is an actual, really kind of a cool story from Ben in Ontario, Canada. And you're going to remember this one, Josh. This is a good one. This guy listened to our exorcism podcast and was talking about a positive possession, a beneficial possession. Mm-hmm. And he has a story about himself. And I'm going to summarize this.
Ben. I remember.
Yeah,
okay,
this is a good one. Ben says 11 years ago, he was in a bad bicycle accident and came between two buses and was hit by a car. This was in high school. He says...
That is a bad bicycle accident.
Yeah. He said he was fully conscious afterwards, even though I went over my handlebars and hit my head on the hood of the car. I was fully aware of the situation and what happened, but he was told he was completely coherent in the ambulance and in the ER with the nurses, even okay with his parents, when he brought him home several hours later. They put him to bed, and 30 minutes later, he woke back up and didn't remember any of it. And it took him a full hour to even find out what had happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben says, I believe during this short time that I was actually possessed by the Egyptian god Horus, H-O-R-U-S.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one with the dog's head, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Okay. So he was possessed by Horus, or an ancient priest from the Temple of Horus. This took control of him and kept his brain from shutting down and having more damage than it did. I know there are other medical explanations as to what happened. Heavy impacts can cause a short-term memory to wipe out, etc. However, this is the belief that I have about it, and it's backed up to me by the fact, this is where it gets good, by about 2 years later, he went to an optometrist and he found marks on the lower outer edge of his eyes, and there are similar marks in paintings of the eyes of Horus. And the doctor could not explain this. He'd never seen it before and could not explain how it happened. So maybe I'm just crazy, and I know some people will think that, but it's what I believe happened to me. And Ben, I wrote you back already. We don't think you're crazy.
Right.
We think that anyone that thinks they have this whole big cosmic soup figured out doesn't know what they're talking about, and that, who knows, you could have very well been possessed by Horus, as far as I know.
Hear, hear, Chuck. Hear.
And that's thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah,
it's
thanks
pretty amazing.
Thanks for opening up for us, Ben. And anybody else who'd like to do the same, whether or not you believe yourself to have been possessed by a benevolent spirit or such, or if you just want to say hi, either one, you can send an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Why Do Some People Believe the Moon Landings Were a Hoax? Originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on February 3rd, 2009. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at HowStuffWorks.com as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to the Downtown Soulville Show on WFMU. My name is Mr. Fine Wine, and for the next hour, I will be spinning you some Soul 45s. I brought some real good ones. Carried them here in this weird metallic box that I carry around with me every Friday, and people always ask me what's in it. I've come up with a whole series of jokes. Sometimes I say, with a grave look on my face, my kidneys. That one usually doesn't go over very well. Soul Music Till 8. Going to dedicate this entire show to the show's biggest fan. You know who you are. Hope you're listening.
Brother came out and said, "Little boy,